And Reverend Michael DeFebo and his wife Babs and his son Christopher made this wonderful spread for us of delicacies, things to eat and drink, and it was just lovely. And then we got taken to the theater, dropped off right in front of the door of the Segerstrom. It was fabulous. No parking, no crowds later, and coming out, walked out of the theater into the car, because Reverend Michael, being Reverend Michael, explained to the people guiding that he was acting as a chauffeur, and it was really important that he be there when his special guest came out of the theater. The evening was spectacular from beginning to end. We came back to my place with a huge coffee and tea and a huge white chocolate cake. It was incredible, and the music was spectacular. All of us have been influenced by Motown music. You may not even have known it. Me, I didn't know it. I didn't know what color anyone was who was singing. I couldn't see it on the radio. But I knew those lyrics. I knew those songs. They told the story of Berry Gordy. Thanks, Doris. Berry Gordy. And how he got the idea and how he started his own record label, because he would write songs that were really good, and they wouldn't put his songs on the back side, on the flip side of the record, just on the front side. They'd put someone that couldn't write on the back side because they were someone's aunt or someone's brother or whatever. And so to have integrity of the music, he created this label. And it was amazing. Diana Ross's character sounded and looked like Diana Ross. Michael Jackson's young person, when he was a kid, that guy was fabulous. The guy who played Marvin Gaye was fabulous. And they told about when they were in the 60s. And remember the 60s. If we think we're having issues today, the 60s had even more issues. And going and traveling to the South, and the coloreds would sit on one side and the white on the other. The coloreds would sit on the other, and there'd be police officers that would instill this, that would make sure that there was a line of demarcation, it wasn't crossed. And to me, the sadness that even was necessary. And then the sadness. So, all of us have been touched and moved by the events in Charleston, South Carolina this last week. And one of the reasons that I want to talk about is, first of all, it's topical. Secondly, if we're going to learn to be mentally healthy, we need to learn how to deal with situations like this. And it's not about them. It's about all of us. I want to read you what our spiritual leader, Ken Gordon, wrote. And what I did yesterday, so we had this wonderful Friday night. Yesterday, I read all of the commentary. I read all of the things that were being said. And my heart broke open. And I was in tears all day. I've been in tears this morning. And it also, I guess, a little nostalgia for my own father, whom I adored and loved. But really, it's that this can still happen, that in a place of worship, someone can come in and study Bible for a whole hour and then massacre because of race. How can that be? Every church, every sacred building, every mosque, every sanctuary should be a sacred, safe place for all beings. For all beings. That's mentally healthy. They sang 50 songs. 50. Here's our program. It was one hit after another. It was just fabulous. Okay. Here's what Dr. Ken said. The horrific shootings at the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, on Wednesday is yet another example of the plague of violence and racism that seems to have no end in our society. We may never know what caused that young man to hate so virulently those whom he did not know personally and did not take their lives in their house of worship, but we can know that he has been influenced by the culture of racism, hate, guns, and violence that surrounds us all. It is almost every movie and television show on the lips of politicians, television, and internet pundits. We cannot heal what we refuse to acknowledge. Ours is a violent culture. In so many ways, we are becoming aware that a large portion of the targets of violence are people of color, our African-American brothers and sisters. To turn away from the racism hidden in our collective psyche, in our social constructs and institutions, is to turn a blind eye on our fellow human beings. I am reminded of Robert F. Kennedy's statement after the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and ironically, not long before his own death by violence. His speech became known as the mindless menace of violence, and this is what, in portion, it said. Whenever any American's life is taken by another American, unnecessarily, whether it is done in the name of the law or in the defiance of law, by any one man or a gang in cold blood or in passion, in an attack of violence or in response to violence, whenever we tear at the fabric of life which another man has painfully and clumsily woven for himself and his children, the whole nation is degraded. Yet we seemingly tolerate a rising level of violence that ignores our common humanity, our claims to civilization alike. We calmly accept newspaper reports of civilian slaughter in far-off lands. We glorify killing on movie and television screens and call it entertainment. We make it easy for men of all shades of sanity to acquire weapons and ammunition they desire. Too often, we honor swagger and bluster and the wielders of force. Too often, we excuse those who are willing to build their own lives on the shattered dreams of others. Some Americans who preach nonviolence abroad fail to practice it here at home. Some who excuse others by inciting riots have their own conduct invited, by their own conduct invited them. Some look for scapegoats, others look for conspiracies. But this is much is clear. Violence breeds violence. Repression brings retaliation. And only a cleaning of our whole society can remove this sickness from our soul. It is my opinion that we can no longer continue to pretend that the travesties we have witnessed, Stanford, Baltimore, Ferguson, and Charleston, are isolated incidents. They are acts of racism, intolerance, and injustice. They're bringing to light a long-standing systemic problem that originates in a consciousness of fear and domination. The prevalence of this inhumanity towards the Black community and the reaction it is receiving from thinking people demonstrates to me that something new wants to be born. And that means something old must be released. Let us, in the Centers for Spiritual Living, do our spiritual duty to take spiritual action. Let us pray for all involved in this tragedy. Let us pray for our society and its leaders. Let us also speak out on behalf of common sense, justice, equality, and peace. Let us see and trust that something powerful and necessary is working its way into expression, that spirit is in the mix, and there will come a time when acts like this will no longer take place. Let us cease the celebration of killing, anytime or any place. Let us turn away from violence, whether it shows up in so-called entertainment. Let us take the lead in bringing about a society that fully embraces diversity and connection so that the manifestation of love and peace is guaranteed. Let us step forward into the vanguard of truly creating a world that works for everyone, a world where peace prevails. And today, call an AME church, offer your condolences and ask when they are praying and what they need. Blessings, Ken Gordon. Yeah. I thought that was such a great idea to actually take action, not to just pray in our own privacy and in our own centers, in our own homes, but call up and ask them for what they need in terms of our support. Brené Brown, the author of many books, Daring Greatly being one of them, who is a researcher on shame, says that this, she also wrote a wonderful article on the Charleston situation, and she says that one of the things that's necessary is for each one of us to own our own stuff, to own our own stories, to own our own prejudice, to own our own bigotry, to tell the truth about it so that we can be free of it. No longer to hide from ourselves. I'm going to just read you one little part. She says, "We will need to sit down with our children and talk about privilege. This means honest conversation about how we were raised and what we need to work on. No blaming or shaming, but truth. It's not productive to deny how hard we all work for what we have, but it's not honest to deny that many of us are afforded privileges based on who we are and what we look like. Will these conversations stop violent hate crimes? No one knows for sure. But we shouldn't underestimate the power of love and truth-telling. This is not bigger than us. This is us. This is not bigger than us. This is us." That's the greatest thing that we can remember. And what do we stand for? We stand for love. We stand for the awareness that the power and presence of God is right where we are, every one of us. And that right where we are, God in us moves through us to bless all the people surrounding us. I grew up in a place that everybody looked like me. I mean, they were older, they were younger, but they were all the same color skin and hair and eyes. There were no blacks. There were no browns. There were no yellows. There were no purples. There was nothing but similar to me. Very homogeneous society, culture that looked like me. And there was no one teaching me how to connect with people of different cultures and values and faiths. And I think that's the key. We, the grandparents, the parents, need to teach people by us, ourselves, reaching out. One of the sweetest things in the whole concert was they were telling the story, and Diana Ross is in Las Vegas, and she gets down off the platform, and she's in the audience right there in Seekersville, and, "Would you like to sing with me? Reach out and touch." And what the first guy, the first woman, you know, when someone gets a microphone, they don't always sing on pitch, and really heard it, wasn't very good, but we all applauded. And then the next guy did it. And then she said, "Why don't you all just take the hand of the person beside you?" She said, "Yes, right now, take the person of the ones you don't know, the ones you came with." It was amazing. Now, I don't know about anyone, both the person sitting to my right, who was June Dixon, and the stranger sitting to the left of me, a man that I don't know, we held hands for that whole song, and it was amazing. It was an amazing connection, and that's all that is needed. Be the change that you wish to see. Be that love. What a perfect day to practice who you are. What a wonderful day that you contribute to others by being healthy-minded. Decide to be healthy. Now is the time. You are the ones. We're the people, and so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I listened. Some of you wanted me a little space before the prayer so I could. So now I'm going to set the consciousness for us to really reach out and touch. And Diane and Jimmy, I guess, are going to help me. And in that place, in that silence, let's let our hearts, if they've broken open, be tender, be filled with love. And this is what I know. I know that there is only one power, and that power that is God is everywhere present. It is in all people. All faiths and cultures, it is. Knowing this, I know that today we celebrate that divine masculine, the Father within, and the Father here in this room and everywhere. I know that this is a day for decision making, to decide to let the past be the past, to heal it, to decide to be one and stand up and speak for justice and love and peace. This is the day to decide not only to be healthy and think healthy and think health, but to be mentally healthy, to practice mental health in a way that you're called not to ignore the negatives, but to deal with them, to take action, to decide that wonderful masculine principle that God in us is. I give so great thanks for this. I give thanks for each one and for the power of life itself right here, right now. With my heart filled with gratitude, I release this word to the action of law. It is complete. And please join me in saying, and so it is.